Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning.
Good morning.
I played that lovely P.P. Arnold record earlier, The First Cut is the Deepest.
And what is that in referring to me for?
Your mate Phil.
Hello? Well, I think he was a little bit disappointing, Phil. There's no doubt about that.
A little bit disappointing, missed the cut.
Well, your Adam Scott didn't do much better, did he?
I didn't say, frankly. I said it was just...
You were promoting him as having the best swing in world golf.
Murray said he's got the best swing going in golf.
Rubbish.
But
rubbish.
A swing does not a tournament make.
No, it does not. And, you know, Bryson has been listening to my strategy, on a bit of weight, muscle up.
Drink loads of protein shakes on the way around.
I mean, he looks like a beast, doesn't he? He looks like an absolute beast, and he smashed it off the tee each and every opportunity. And when someone takes a different approach, you've got to take it a little bit seriously, actually, and certainly separate him from the field. Listen, I thought it was wonderful. For the record, best swing in golf, Freddie Couples,
okay.
No one like him.
Yeah, just to be fair to Bryson DeChambeau, it's all very well having the power, but you've still got to put it in the hole, haven't you, at the end of the day?
Yeah, his putting was great, his temperament was fantastic, and I think a lot of people like him. I think he'll be seen as a worthy winner.
Okay, right, so on to the markets. Kind of mixed bag last week, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, mixed messages coming through from the OECD, the Federal Reserve, that dour tone, of course, from the Bank of England as they start to consider negative interest rates, along with concerns over valuations and regulatory pressure in the tech sector. And we should remember, of course, the rapid increase in COVID cases certainly keeping investors on edge. It wasn't all negative last week. Lots of talk around mergers, improving Chinese retail sales figures that we saw, and positive comments around the development of a vaccine helping to partly offset some of that negative sentiment. Equity performance last week, weakness in technology shares pushed US stocks to a six-week low. S&P 500 was only down 0.6%, has to be said, over the course of the trading week. Weakness in travel-related stocks, along with the banks and car makers, holding back the stock 600 in Europe. It was up just 0.2%. Rising infection rates is really starting to have an impact, I think, on the recovery. Global COVID-19 infections passed the 30 million mark at the end of last week. Deaths now stand at 950,000. US, India, and Brazil reporting the highest number of cases. The World Health Organization warned that the virus is spreading at an alarming rate in Europe, resulting, of course, in further restrictions. So the key to future growth prospects continues to be a globally approved, manufactured, and distributed vaccine. Last week, Pfizer CEO said it's likely the US will deploy a COVID-19 vaccine to the public before year-end. So that's a really positive statement by an influential industry leader, perhaps carrying more weight than the exaggerated, often contradictory claims made by politicians. We should acknowledge scientists are making progress at an unprecedented pace. Credible updates, I think, will continue to be a key driver of market sentiment. Though something I was looking at over the course of the weekend, which is vaccine hesitancy. I don't know if you've looked at this, but the World Health Organization lists it in the top 10 of health threats, and that may infringe upon the progress to control the disease in the future.
Come on, you weren't looking at anything except the golf, were you, over the weekend?
A little bit of a mixture. The golf doesn't come on till late. So I was looking at this, and there's some interesting charts, actually, on the World Health Organization's website that talks about the process around vaccine hesitancy and what an impact it has in terms of being a threat coming through. So it's well worth looking at. So even if we do get this vaccine, how many people takes it, of course, will be incredibly important. This will be a new vaccine. You hear the whole campaigns around, you know, people who are against the vaccine already. So it's I think that will be an interesting development.
I think you have to distinguish between anti-vaxxers and people who just be a bit reluctant to take the first vaccine that comes along.
True. But, you know, you add them together and it's a whole lot of people potentially not taking it if and when it's available. What would that mean for governments? I guess it will encourage them to make sure that the campaign is strong enough to get as many people as possible to take it. And perhaps even, I mean, you can't force people, I wouldn't imagine, to take it in most places. But you can make life pretty difficult for them if they decide not to.
Unless they make it compulsory.
Well, compulsory is a difficult term, it has to be said. But maybe if you have to travel, or maybe you have to go to work, or you can't do certain things unless you've been vaccinated, then that may encourage more people.
And it looks like, well, I'm, you know, reading between the lines, that you might be heading for another 2-week lockdown at some point in the near future.
It feels tough in the UK, there's no doubt about that. The headlines and numbers are going certainly in the wrong direction. There's a big press conference later today by the chief scientific officer, the chief health officer, who we've become, of course, very well acquainted with over the course of the past few months, talking about what concerns there are around the numbers. We have seen regional lockdowns coming into place. We've seen curfews coming into place. Lots of pictures coming out of Newcastle over the course of the weekend as the 10 p.m. curfew came into place that hit somewhat of the vibrant nightlife up there. But actually, given where we are, perhaps it would become no surprise if we were to go into a accelerated lockdown, but probably for a much shorter period than we've been seeing in the past.
We say that things are tough in the UK. Sarah, how many cases of coronavirus did we have in France yesterday?
10,500.
And I think you had nearly 4,000 yesterday in the UK, didn't you?
Yeah, but I don't think you can compare those numbers, to be honest with you. A lot of that comes down to where they are in terms of the testing process and how that's taking place. So, and also the COVID deaths are all compiled in a different way from country to country. For example, in the UK, if you caught COVID in March, recovered from it, and were hit by a bus in September and killed, that would still count as a COVID death. So I don't know if you can compare the numbers from one place to another. The other concern is, of course, around testing in the UK, which maybe I don't know what the situation in France is, but the reality is it's almost impossible to get a test on the public health service at the moment. I can tell you this from my own experience. Henry had a cough last week on Tuesday, so the school sent him home and said self-isolate for 14 days or certainly don't come back to school or get a test. But to get a test was nigh on impossible. Fortunately, we managed to get one eventually. But he basically was off for 3 days. So if it's hard to get a test, number one, and number two, if you set the bar of every child having a cough in the UK gets sent home at this time of year, that's going to cause amazing pressure on the system that simply can't handle it.
Well, you know what you should do?
Go on.
Stop buying him cigars.
Stop buying. You always, you know, even when I try to make serious points, you have to bring it down, don't you, every time? He's not a Monte Cristo fan.
In fairness to the UK government, France has had a lot of problems with testing. People are wasting a long time to get their tests done, and they're not always accurate as well. So it doesn't appear to be a UK-specific problem there. But the French government does appear to be determined to avoid another national lockdown at all costs.
Well, we've seen the impact it has in terms of the economy. We've seen the impact it has in terms of mental health. And there's some feeling, I think, the public were got through the first lockdown. It was a novelty. Some people, you know, were happy to stay at home, at least for a short time. It feels like that's not going to be the case the second time around. And convincing people that it's a price worth paying, I think, will be much, much harder second time around.
From Russia with love, TikTok.
Yes, Donald Trump has agreed Oracle's bids for the American operations of TikTok, allowing the popular video sharing app to escape a US ban imposed as part of the president's pressure campaign on China. On concerns, this is regarding data privacy that the US said creates a national security risk. New company will be called TikTok Global. Agreed to funnel $5 billion in new tax dollars to the United States to set up a new education fund, satisfying President's demand that the government secures payment from the deal. Oracle will take 12.5% stake in the new group, will hand the cloud computing element to it. Walmart 7.5% of the entity. They will handle things like payments. Shortly after the president signaled approval, the Commerce Department delayed by a week a ban that would have forced the likes of Apple and Google to pull the app from its stores. So hopefully coming to a conclusion that story.
Yeah, but hang on. ByteDance is saying this morning that it will still own 80% of TikTok Global, which is what the new US firm will be called.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange, all of that, isn't it? I think the plan is that they'll take these stakes initially, then part of the company will be floated. That will get to the point where US investors have around 40% of the global TikTok business, satisfying the rule that it will be certainly a significant element will be owned by US investors. And that's where some of the concerns have come through. And the fact that you've got other companies taking on some of these important components, the likes of Oracle, for example, around some of those data issues, perhaps reduces some of the risks. So it's not simply about who owns it, but it's who's handling and controlling a lot of the data.
Foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 129.5 this morning. Euro dollar 118. You're going to get €1.09 for your British pound.
Busy day for you today, then.
It's a really busy day. How do you know that?
Well, I just know. Just yeah, reading between the lines. But you wish it was Friday again, don't you?
Oh, I'd love it to be Friday.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Have a nice day.
Hang pots and Barclays.